श्रीला गुरुदेव की
जय।
श्रीमन महाप्रभु की
जय।
श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की
जय।
श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की
जय।
श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा की
जय।
श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की
जय।
श्री राधा गोविंद की
जय।
गौर भक्त वृंद की
जय।
गौर प्रेमा So good evening to all of you. Welcome. Pranam. And special thanks to Prem Devi Sadananda Prabhu for the invitation and hosting us here. First time in Switzerland, first time here, first time in Ananda Dham, first time everywhere. So, first time meeting all of you, most of you as well. But as Krishna Chandra Prabhu very nicely mentioned, first time, quote unquote, but at the same time, the experience comes over and over again. Very old. These are not only your very old friends, but also probably you will start to discover, oh, it seems that it feels like we have been connected for so long. Because naturally, all of us are in our own journey. So the fact that we are converging in this lifetime, in this moment, in this place, in our particular journey, also speaks about the journey that took us here today. So there is many elements in common in our journey that to have us today meeting in this particular moment, this particular point. So in that sense, we are all friends, sharing very, very similar search and longing, and having entered in touch with a very unique, similar kind of mercy, that of Sriman Mahaprabhu and his divine agents. So now, as Krishna Chandra Prabhu was mentioning, we are trying to do something about it. Krishna has sent you a big, powerful embrace. And now we are trying to become expert in giving him back the embrace. And reciprocating with so much mercy that has come and keeps coming. So, Krishna Chandra Prabhu mentioned very nicely, our hope is to make this process in our lives, to make it process as real as it is. So bhakti is the highest form of reality, the highest form of realism, if you will. So if we are to participate in the highest form of reality, we have to take that reality as real as it is. In other words, we have to take this devotional journey very seriously. Krishna Chandra Prabhu mentioned this is not a Sunday afternoon affair. No, this is not a weekend hobby or something. When I have free time, I do bhakti. But actually the opposite, ideally. Abhyartha kalatvam. Rupa Goswami says, when you are really imbibed in bhakti, naturally the sensation will come. Naturally. I cannot lose any millisecond without bhakti. No. One instant without bhakti is the greatest loss. In a natural way, this sensation should come. Not in a fanatical, imposed way, because that can happen also. But in a very organic development, we should like realize how user-friendly bhakti is. How powerful bhakti is, how much bhakti has the capacity of entering into each and every aspect of my life. As we said the other day, even in the most ordinary moments, especially in the most ordinary moments. So that's a very important, how to say, way of approaching bhakti. In those moments that I feel the most ordinary, that means that I need something very extraordinary. So bhakti is that extraordinary thing. And can come to our life and make everything bhakti. So that's the power of bhakti. It knocks on your door, and if you dare to open that door, bhakti is like a powerful current. And will cover, drown everything. Everything will become touched, sprinkled by bhakti. That's the power of bhakti, that's the power of sadhu sangha. When Guru Maharaj likes to describe this idea of prachar. Sometimes we translate prachar as preaching. But to be honest with you, personally I don't like that word that much. Sounds a little bit like let's convert the whole world and evangelize and proselytize. And the word prachar, it's intending something else. No, it means pra-achar. Achar means conduct, behavior. And pra means a very special type of. So prachar means a very special type of behavior. So in other words, you become so much affected by bhakti that starts to affect others. That's actual preaching. Not so much I have to impose, but you just have to expose what's overflowing in your heart. So that was Mahaprabhu's technique, if you will. He didn't try to convince people. He was just focused on overflowing. As we were speaking the other day on Srila Siddhar Maharaj's Tirubhav, one of his books is called Golden Volcano of Divine Love. So that's a very accurate way of describing Sri Chaitanya Dev. He was golden, as we know, Gauranga. But he described him as a golden volcano, erupting constantly in ecstasy. And the lava coming from that consuming everything on its way. We pray to be part of that, being consumed by that lava. So Mahaprabhu was so full in himself that his fullness started to overflow and start to sprinkle others. Here we are as a testimony of that. No? Our attempt to become a bhakti is because how much Mahaprabhu is overflowing. At least in my case, there is no other way of explaining how can I be here now. So that's the most effective way of reaching others' heart. No? First reach your own heart, go as deep as you can, and overflow. And that start to sprinkle other people. Sometimes no need even to say anything. That was Mahaprabhu's standard. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He was the greatest pandit of whole India. So saying the greatest pandit of whole India basically means the greatest pandit of the whole world, probably. And he was converted to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So you can think of maybe Mahaprabhu had to write a whole thesis and present it to Sarvabhauma, trying to convince him. Sarvabhauma was such a great logician. He had such a different conclusion, like Advaita Vedanta. So. But as we know, how did Mahaprabhu convert to Sarvabhauma? He didn't. He say anything. He say nothing. He in silence sat for a week. That was his conversion technique. He just sat for a week, he listened to the Bhattacharya, and after a week, Bhattacharya was practically converted. No, because so much was coming from the example of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu was so much full, overflowing with his own realization. It's just his very presence spoke for itself. Pra-achar, a very special type of behavior. There's one nice quote in Christianity, and they say sometimes, I think from some Saint Augustine, he said, always preach the gospel, and when that's necessary, use words. Like implying, generally it shouldn't be necessary. No. Your example should speak louder than your precept. So Krishna Chandra was mentioning, it's easy to sit and open the mouth. Relatively. I can tell you, I'm doing that all day. Sitting and opening my mouth. People invite me here and there for sitting and opening my mouth. So you are very generous. But then I have to wake up from this seat. I have to go to my room. And I have to sit again. But close my mouth. And open my heart. No? To my own practice, to my prayer, to my sadhana. And I will be put to test like Prahlad was. No? Krishna will say, oh, Padmana Maharaj, you opened your mouth so nicely for 2 hours. Or more in Ananda Dham. That's the price I have to pay. The longer the classes, the more I will be put to test. So you can imagine, my stay in Ananda Dham was beautiful, but very challenging. Because Krishna say, oh, you're opening your mouth twice a day for 3 hours. 6 hours of opening your mouth, Maharaj. Okay, you have like 18 hours remaining of your day. Let's put you to test these remaining 18 hours. Let's see how much you walk your talk, as they say in the US. How much you practice what you are saying. So, there is a price to open the mouth. But as Krishna Chandra Prabhu mentioned, we should know where to stop speaking and listening as well. Listening to other sadhus. Listening to the environment, listening to our inner consciousness. Pay close attention in every possible direction. And hopefully praying to reply like Prahlad did. He passed the test. He said Nishimhas Bhagavan is everywhere, and then he had a vision to support his speech. And sometimes we may not have the vision to support our speech. And those tests will show us that. But we should be inspired to know, okay, then I have to increase my realizations, my insights. And probably I have to open less my mouth, a little bit less. And concentrate more in diving deep into my heart. Like a digging process. That day I was here in Thomas Keating's with So he was giving this important, interesting example, very Madhurya Kadambini like example. Describing the different stages, describing the whole process like a digging affair. So in the beginning you start to dig, and relatively easy to take some soil from the ground. But the deeper you go, the harder is the soil, the more difficult it is to dig. So you may get discouraged, like, oh no, it's so hard, so difficult. So the inner work of a sadhaka may well work like that also. The more subtle you start to penetrate, the hardest it will become, if you will. But that's not to be discouraged. That's a confirmation that you are advancing. So we should become very expert in decoding, translating actually what's actually taking place. Not only what seems to be taking place. Because it seems it's getting harder. It's not as easy as before. But properly translated means you are advancing. You are getting closer to your goal. Indeed, we have no actual reason to become discouraged. If we keep in the proper company, we will realize I have no real excuse, no real reason to become discouraged. Krishna is so perfect and his mercy is so unique that he actually is not given any real reason to become discouraged. I mean, we can choose to become discouraged, that's another thing. But that means we are becoming distracted from what's actually taking place. There's one nice philosopher from Argentina, the place, country I was born in this lifetime. And he says, you are not depressed. You are distracted.
You are?
Distracted. Distracted. Not like implying, you are losing sight of what's actually taking place. If you will pay proper attention in the proper direction, there is no place for depression, discouragement, and so on. So our whole practice is about paying attention in the proper direction. That's the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. When Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva, as you may know, he looked at the calendar. So I have only 7 days to live. Is that enough time? Try to imagine you have 7 days to live. Probably you have. It's okay. Probably you have less or more, whatever. So you may ask the question. Imagine if I tell you, you have 1 week to live. So, hopefully you ask, is that enough time to reach transcendence? Hopefully that's your question. Let's be naive and think, yeah, that's the question. So Parikshit Maharaj had that question. And he asked his Gurudev, is enough? 1 week is enough to attain perfection? And Sukadeva Goswami kind of chuckled. He laughed in a soft way and said, like, oh, Parikshit, just one second of paying proper attention in the proper direction, that's more than enough to reach perfection. What to speak of 1 week? So much time you have. So he was making this point. I mean, if you really become capable of concentrating and focusing without distraction in the best possible direction, that's it. So that's what we are trying to do on a daily basis. To train ourselves, to train our minds, to develop proper samskaras, impressions, acquire proper, so we can focus more and more in the proper direction. Well, like Krishna Chandra Prabhu was mentioning his experience with people leaving this body. And that's a very crucial moment, the point in which you have to choose. Where I want, do I want to focus my attention? I cannot choose more than one thing. No? So once one devotee say that. Krishna is giving you 70, 80 years of life. So you can decide about that one thing that you have to be thinking in the moment of your leaving the body. So generally you have that time to decide between many possibilities. Yam jam bhapishmaram bhavam tyayantyanti kalivaram. Krishna is saying, according to the bhava in which you live your body, no, bhava also can mean mood or, you will attain a particular bhava. Bhava also means state of existence. Hmm. Of course, as we always say, we as Gaudiyas do not care too much for becoming liberated from samsara and all this stuff. But because we don't care for that, then we have more reason to take the matter even more seriously. No, that we don't care for samsara means doesn't mean that we will become lazy. Because we have eternity to reach Golok, so no rush. On the contrary, we don't care for samsara means I want that bhakti as soon as I can. And I want to, and only want that after that bhakti, more bhakti and further bhakti. So, and again, we will receive this bhakti in greater and greater quantities and quality, if you will, the more we we keep ourselves buzzing at the feet of the Vaishnavas, if you will. We don't care for any form, any type of birth, but we want to become some form of bumblebee. Krishna himself is described as a bumblebee. Famous Brahmare Gita, the song of the bumblebee. There are many things to say about that section for sure. But one idea in that connection is that that Krishna himself is the bumblebee. And he's known as, he has many names in connection to that. Madhupati and so on. Madhu, Shirada herself would call the bumblebee Madhupa, which also means like drunkard. Because Krishna is described as a bumblebee. Interestingly, in connection to Vrindavan, Krishna is described as a bumblebee, as an elephant. He starts to take many animal shapes. He becomes transformed by the prem of the Brajavas and he starts to alter his normal form, if you will. So why a bumblebee? Because we could say that the hearts of the Brajavasis are like lotuses. Now with their particular respective pollen, if you will, nectar. And Krishna is a bumblebee. He's a drinker of nectar. So he will go to the heart of one Brajavasi and start to drink nectar. But he's not following the standard of the bumblebee. Because a bumblebee generally goes from one flower to another. From there comes the word Madhukari, the word of the bee, bumblebee, which means you are begging in one door a little bit, in one door a little bit, in one door some grains here, one chapati there. It's not that you just know about one single place that gives lots of chapatis and you go every day to that place. My Guru Maharaj once told that story, that one devotee was doing Madhukari, and he told, Maharaj, in that particular house, you can have very nice Madhukari. And Maharaj said, that's not Madhukari. It's not finding a good place and you just receive everything one place and then go home with my stomach full. Madhukari means a little bit here, a little bit there. If something comes at all. So that's the dynamic of the bumblebee, a little bit here and there. But in one sense, we could say that Krishna is not doing that. You know, he's like a bumblebee entering the heart of the Vrajavasis and start to drink the liquor of their love. But he's not leaving that flower. No, he becomes addicted. So he remains there and remains there and remains there. So the night is coming and the lotus is closing. And you will say to the bumblebee, leave the flower, you will be trapped there. But at this point, Krishna is totally intoxicated. So like when you are drunk, I mean, you cannot have a very sober dialogue with someone who is like... So this way, no, the lotus closes and the bumblebee remains trapped there. But the bumblebee is happy there. He continues drinking the nectar. So in this way, Krishna is trapped in the heart of his devotees, basically. Sadhavo hridayam mayam sadunam hridayam tvam madanyatina jananti tevyo managapi. So, and again, this verse is spoken by Narayana. So this is Kaimutya, Kaimutya Nyaya. Okay, mutyanya means something is being said with the idea of if this is like this, what to speak of? So Narayan in the Bhagavatam is saying, I am the heart of my devotees. My devotees are my heart. I don't know anyone apart from them. They do not know anyone apart from me. But they say, but Narayan in Vaikuntha. So Kaimutya, what to speak of? What must be Krishna's version of that verse? What can Krishna say in relation to the Brajavasis? How much more he is possessed by their love trapped in their hearts. And they're trapped in his heart, if you will. So our prayer is to...
Can you give an example for that? For Krishna's version of this verse?
For Krishna's version. She's asking or you're asking?
I'm asking.
Krishna Chandra is a tricky one. Well, the immediate idea that comes, of course, as we know, is, as we spoke these days, is Napari, Ham Nirapadya Sanjayam, Sasadu Krityam Vibudhaya Sapivan, Vachamabajan Durjaragiha Shrinkala, Sambrishchatadvapratyatu Sadhana. Krishna is telling the gopis, Krishna is a bumblebee in the heart of the gopis. He's trapped in the lotus of their hearts. So to such a point, because in the other verse Narayan is speaking, it seems like it's reciprocal. No? I'm their heart, they're in my heart, I don't think about them, they only think about me, I only think about them. But in this verse that Krishna speaks to the gopis, he's basically telling them, you are thinking only about me, and I'm thinking about you, but I also have so many other devotees. No? Have friends, cows, trees, parents. So I'm divided in reciprocating with so many. But you don't have that duality. You are only pointed to me. No? Even some of my other Brajavasi friends, no? or Brajavasi devotees. No? Nanda and Yashoda, Nanda can love Krishna. And she doesn't have to leave Nanda Maharaj for that. Madhu Mangal loves Krishna. She doesn't need to leave Suval Sridham for loving Krishna. But for Radha to love Krishna, she has to leave everyone else. All family members, all titles. So the parakya becomes accomplished, if you will. So Krishna is like astonished, like, you are leaving everything for just for me. Durjara giha shrinkala, those things that are impossible to leave for everyone else. But I'm divided into so many devotees. So I cannot reciprocate accordingly. I cannot tell what Narayan said in Vaikuntha in the other verse of the previous canto of the Bhagavatam. He spoke there like if he will be reciprocating on equal terms, basically. But here I'm confessing, Krishna, I have to break my bow in the Gita. No? So that's Srimad Bhagavatam.
Can you say which vow?
Which vow? I'm going to the verse 4:11. Jyatamam prapadyanti tamsataiva bhajamyaham. Mamabartmanu vartante manusya partasarva. Krishna is saying, As much as you approach me, I will reciprocate accordingly. So that's Bhagavad Gita. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a higher, if you will, expression of the Bhagavad Gita. So some things that were said in the Gita are contradicted in the Bhagavatam. So then you realize, oh, here I am a higher version of the other thing. And the last opinion is the one that is the conclusive one. Like if a person has different opinions about some topic during his life or her life, the last opinion is the one that counts the most. So in the Gita, Krishna says, I reciprocate accordingly with my devotees. In the Bhagavatam say, I cannot do that. Sorry, I have to contradict that verse in the Gita. The love of the Brajavas and the Gopis in particular is such that I cannot reciprocate. So I remain eternally indebted. We are giving some summary of our last class in that in Ananda Dham, in case you were not able to be there. Because this is in connection to a famous verse that Brahma presented in the Brahma Stuti, verse 35. Brahma is saying, Krishna, these Brajabasis are giving everything to you. Their home, wealth, family, animals, bodies, minds, hearts, everything only for your sake. And you are the topmost prize for that everyone can attain. You are the ultimate reward for everyone. So my question is, what will you give to the Brajavasis in exchange for their love? Because you have given yourself to Putana. And Putana wants to kill you. So you don't tell me, please, that you will give yourself to the Brajavasis. That's a totally different situation. Putana wanted to kill you. Brajavasis are willing to kill themselves for your sake. So how will you repay back these Brajavasis? So that was asked by Brahma in chapter 14 of the 10th canto. And Krishna remains silent. He doesn't reply. 1, 2, 3, 10, 15, 18 chapters of the Bhagavatam Krishna thinking about. Good question, Brahma. How will I repay to this Brajavasis? And finally, he comes to an answer with the verse we mentioned before. When he says to the gopis, he doesn't come with, oh, now I know how to pay. He said, now I know I cannot repay. Because your love is of such a nature, I cannot even know how much do I have to pay. What to speak of paying that? I cannot know how much is the debt. So Krishna said, I remain forever indebted. But I'll try to do something about it. I'll try to repay by making devotees for you. I'll try to sing your glories throughout the world. And I'll try to taste the love that you have for me. I want to taste that experience. So in this highest point of the Bhagavatam, we find the birth of Gaur-lila. Mahaprabhu appearing with all those purposes and more in mind. So anyhow, that will be one version of of Krishna regarding the Brajavasis in connection to Sada Bohir Dayam Mayam, of course. So anyhow, we are praying to also become bumblebees and enter into the hearts of the Vaishnavas, the sadhus, and remain there forever praying that the night may come and the lotus may close, along the dark night of the soul may come, and we may remain sucking the nectar from the pollen of the hearts of these Vaishnavas and attain divine intoxication. Pibhata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam. That's the blessing that the Bhagavatam is giving. That's the Asirvad Sloka of the Bhagavatam. Asirvad Sloka is the verse in the book that shares what's the fruit of the prize, the reward that the Bhagavatam will give. And what the Bhagavatam say? Pipata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. Which means drink this Bhagavatam for eternity. And this Bhagavatam is like an elixir. So you will drink it and you may pass out because of intoxication. So the Bhagavatam will say, so you will drink this Bhagavatam and probably you will faint. But when you wake up from the fainting, please wake up and drink again. And so on, ad infinitum. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Eternally drunk. Anyhow, some thoughts that came in connection to Krishna Chandra Prabhu's introductory words, I believe. So thank you so much for that. And we are supposed to entertain questions today. So we have still some minutes, I think. Still we have eternity with us. So I don't know if there are any questions you may like to present today, or some topics you would like that we speak about today?
Now we are like back here in Zurich again, so it's just great for me also to have your association in Ananda Dham and to have Harikatha and to like. So now I came back here, and you know the struggle is real. Like, you know, being at a place like Ananda Dham, spending time with bhaktas and being like in this beautiful nature, it's like very healing and very easy to be.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very comfortable.
Mm.
So now, next Tuesday, I restart work again, you know, we start, and there's a lot of stuff like, you know.
Yeah.
We are still in a very delicate and crazy time, you know. And we did not talk about this at all in Ananda Dham. So now I take the chance, because we are not in Ananda Dham anymore. So how do you see the quality of the time right now? What happens here in this world? And maybe you can like just give us some small guidance, you know, how we should focus on our spiritual life now, also in these crazy times.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, and I think for many others, it's difficult to be in this material world right now, especially in the city, and you know, like, mm-hmm. we don't really know what's going on, we don't know what will happen again, and you know, it's not very, you know, like pointing on a certain question, but just like what you feel, and that would be very nice if you could share something.
Well, to begin, I will say that I will try to emphasize the point of personal responsibility.
Can you speak a little louder?
Yes. So I would like to begin by emphasizing the point of responsibility in the sense of the choices we make. No? For example, someone say, well, I'm back here and I'm doing this and I'm living this and I'm in this particular situation in life. So I think to begin with it's important to take responsibility how much we are the ones choosing that. I remember, I think I told that to Krishna Chandra the other day, once I was giving a lecture and speaking about becoming bumblebees and all the things. And one person in the audience, I think it was first time hearing, so he was a little bit like volcanic eruption, but not like Mahaprabhu. So he told me, like, I mean, I won't shout like he did, but imagine that what I'm saying quiet, it was like, in this level. So you are speaking about all the things, very nice concepts, very nice ideals, but, he told me, but I have 8 children. Now he like pointed, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So I have to be working all day, to feed them, to send them to school, blah, blah, blah. He started like to almost complain about the situation. No? So I don't have time for anything. So he was like in that mood. No? I would think about Bhaktivinoda Thakur that, oh, he had 50, no? Anyhow, he was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But what came to me to reply to him, of course I didn't quote, say Bhaktivinoda Thakur or anything, I said, okay, you have 8 children, I can imagine you must be pretty busy. But you chose to have 8 children. So please become responsible. Do not complain about the consequences of your choices. You chose each one of those 8 times to invoke a soul, hopefully. Hopefully it was a conscious act. And if not, you chose to take something to be unconscious during that act. Whatever the case, it is your responsibility. And it's okay. I mean, I'm not saying that's wrong, but just please take responsibility. Because that will help you to navigate that complex situation in a more healthy way. Because if not, very in a subtle way, we start to play the victim. Or we start to enter more into victim consciousness instead of Krishna consciousness. One thing is the opposite of the other. So be careful to play the victim consciousness game. No, that's not good. Of course, I told him, I don't have any children, I am a sannyasi. I've been a monk all my life, basically. But that doesn't mean that I don't have responsibilities. No, indeed, in one sense, I have people who somehow I have to take care of. Like children, if you want to put it like that. And they are way more than the ones I could reproduce biologically. So if I wanted to be free from that charge of having children by being a sannyasi, I didn't make the proper choices. I ended up having more. So my point is, my beginning point will be that we shouldn't like complain about our present situation. I'm not saying you are complaining, I'm just making that point. Because sometimes that can happen. That's a weakness in our human psychology, like, play the victim. Now, I'm not condemning if we play the victim, it's part of our weakness. But at least we should be intelligent enough to know, whenever I'm heading in that direction, there's no real shelter in victimhood. It seems like, that I will obtain something by playing that role, but we should take responsibility. And of course, it's something we have in our life. We do not like that. We have to try to change that. And if we cannot change that, because there are things that no matter how much you try, it's still there. So you have to learn to deal with that. For some reason, that remains there, no matter how hard you try to change the situation. So we have a whole philosophy to deal with that. In the spirit of healthy tolerance, that tenu kampanshu samikshamanu. So that will be a first point to begin with. Also, as I always like to say, I will suggest, recommend devotees not to think that they are living in the material world. Again, it's a personal choice. Because that's a state of consciousness. No? So if we start to see everything in our world as an energy of Krishna, then we can relate to that differently. Of course, it's easy to say that sitting here. And it's difficult sometimes in practice. You may say, but Maharaj, I have this situation, this is more complex. And I'm sure there are challenges, of course. As I always say, I never use the word easy. But also we should never use the word impossible. We should always try for the middle path. So what's the middle path, the middle point between the easy and impossible?
Difficult.
That's the middle point. Difficult is not extreme. That's the middle path. Sorry if you don't like that answer. Sometimes we don't. Remember, I'm reading and seeing your faces now. Sometimes we don't like difficulty. We want things to be easier. And that's the problem, actually. The problem is not that something is difficult. The problem is that we are difficult. We are difficult people. Our minds are quite more complex than they should be, probably. So we should simplify ourselves. No? Instead of trying to change the whole world outside of us. We have to begin at home. So, of course, we are living in very particular times. That's the quality of the time we are living in, Kali Yuga. And as we know, now you have two possibilities in Kali Yuga. You can live in the Iron Age, with all these very unique depictions that the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam is sharing with you, just to make you tremble. Sounds like apocalyptic terror movie or something like that. And you don't need to wait for 400,000 years. You just can turn on the TV at any moment. And you can feel the Bhagavatam missed so many of this terror stuff. No, I mean, I can just fill in the lines of the Bhagavatam, speaking about what I'm seeing here and this and that. I can write my own 12th canto now. So that's one choice in the direction of Kali Yuga. But as we know, also there's this concept of Dhanya Kali, of the fortunate Kali Yuga. Because as we spoke the other day, now the Bhagavatam starts describing Kali Yuga in the 12th canto, and it seems the worst possible place and time to exist at all. But very interestingly, as it is getting to its conclusion, the Bhagavatam starts to present a but. No? So yeah, this is the worst, but he starts to turn gradually to the golden age, if you want to call it like that, no? To Mahaprabhu's presence in Kali Yuga. And starts to turn on the picture to such a point that it takes you to the conclusion Kali Yuga is the best possible age to live in. So that's an interesting paradox you have to accommodate. It's the worst age and it's the best age. So what makes the difference? How I choose to live in that age. So again, personal responsibility. The potential is there in the two sides. No? The most disastrous, bizarre things that can happen and you will never imagine are going on in this Kali Yuga. And many more things that we are not aware of. So, because hopefully we are not like bombarding our minds every day following every news and everything that is happening, because it may be too much, to be honest. I remember once my dad asked me, I asked him first, Dad, why you are always reading the newspapers every day? He told me, to be in touch with reality. I said, oh, for me to do so, I exactly do the opposite. So we have different methodologies. Of course, I'm not criticizing that you are aware of a certain level what's going on in the world. Because even myself, I'm traveling and addressing audiences, and you want to have an idea of the zeitgeist to remain relevant to certain dynamics of the people's lives. But also that should be put in its own place, in its own category. The point is that when we start to pay more attention than we need to in those direction, that starts to become more real than what it should be. Unproportionately, the golden side of Kali Yuga starts to become not as real as it is. So I would say, I mean, I personally, I'm not the idea that, I don't know, in a few decades, the whole planet Earth will become a Gaudiya Vaishnava or something like that. Heaven on Earth, and the whole world will be chanting Haribo, Haribo, and that's all. For me, like, it's a very simplistic way of solving the whole things. Because there are so many devotees in the world preaching, so at one point everyone will become a devotee. But sometimes the implication is in between the lines, and I don't have to do the work I have to do personally to change myself. Because if the whole world becomes a devotee, then I just join the cold current and I'm carried by the universal wave. But probably that's not happening. At least at present, it doesn't seem like Gaudiya Vaishnavism is taking on the world or something like that. No. I mean, I'm not against him becoming more relevant and being better positioned as a religious, spiritual voice in the world. it will be interesting because we have many important points of view to share, even regarding everything. But I wouldn't say that's going on at the present yet, too much. So there's work to do in that direction. So what to speak of thinking in a few decades, everyone will be rolling on the ground chanting Gauranga. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. That would be nice, but let's be realistic. And still, this is Marta Lok. So it's not that, I mean, everything will become Golok Vrindavan, and there's no more need to material universes and so on. Now, when Haridas Thakur asks Mahaprabhu, you are present here, you are chanting, singing, everyone will become liberated. So what will happen with planet Earth? It will become empty. No? Something like that. Everyone will go on the other to Golok, and Maya Shakti will go to ruin. There's no more samsara business. But of course, Mahaprabhu replied with our Gaudiya Siddhanta, which is there is an unlimited number of jivas. So it's not that at some point every single jiva that you can count them, they will go to Golok Vrindavan, and there's no more need to material creation. That's an eternal, ongoing reality. Shristi Lila. So I'm saying all this in order to, how to say, sometimes we take too seriously what's going on in the world. And again, proportionately, that may prevent us from not taking Krishna consciousness that seriously. And our minds becomes more concerned about certain issues that actually we cannot do that much to change them. And we lose sight of what we can do on a personal level to change those things that we can change personally. Because of course, you can start to enter into the details of war and potential atomic bombs and every whole planet disappearing. But the point is, what's the use of excessive thinking in that direction? Will you be able to change something of that? And so my point is, I mean, how to say, and hopefully you'll get my point. Even if at some point some country say, okay, let's share some atomic bombs and make the whole planet disappear. In one sense, nothing happens. I mean, I hope you don't feel I'm being, oh, he's too indifferent, this Swami, cold-hearted sannyasi renunciant. He doesn't care for what will happen to my dog and my tree and my house. But we have to learn to see the thing from a bigger picture. I always like, one day this meditation came to me and I always kept that with me, which is how whatever I'm doing now, what impact this is having in eternity? Is this having some impact in eternity, or is it not reaching that plane? Because if it has nothing to do with the eternity, and I am eternal, that has nothing to do with who I am, then how much important that is. So again, I'm not promoting indifference, but I'm promoting a healthy level of detachment. Detachment is not indifference. Detachment means take certain distance from some situation so you can see it for what it is. When you get too close to something, probably you lose sight of what that actually is. Famous example. My hand and my eye. My hand is too close to my eye, to the point that I cannot see my hand. It's so close. I cannot see my hand, I cannot see anything. I'm blocking my vision. So I had to get detached from my hand. So detached doesn't mean cut your hand. Just take some distance and see your hand at the distance. It cannot be more distance than this. My arm is that long. So now I can appreciate so many details from my hand. But if it's here, I cannot see anything. It's too close. So I need detachment. So detachment again means distance, but not indifference. I call it distance so I can better understand what's going on. So many of these daily worldly situations, we need to take them with some distance. So we can really understand what's taking place considering the bigger picture. And we as Gaudiya Vaishnava, we really have a bigger picture. So to put everything on the scale. And of course, many of us or most of us may say, well, Maharaj, but I live in the city, I have my job, my family, my... And it's okay, I'm not saying everyone has to go to Nanda Dham or to get a cave and that's all. No, we have to remain practical and relevant. But my point is, you can conduct in all those daily domestic affairs with a new, different outlook. As we say the other day, no? And I asked once one devotee in Argentina, he was kind of telling me, I'm working a lot. And I kind of joke with him, like, but why are you working? Why to work? He was like, well, you want some water? And he said, well, I need to get money. Why do you want money? And he said, well, I have to maintain my family. And I asked, and why you're maintaining your family? And he was like, oh, I never asked that question. He was like, I thought it ended there. And you have to add one more question and one more answer to that question. Hopefully, if you are a Vaishnava, you say, I'm maintaining my family as a service to Krishna. So if Krishna appears in the equation, the whole sequence acquires value. Srila Prabhupada will give this famous example. Krishna is number one. One, like the number, one. Everything else is like a zero. A house, body, car, possessions, zero, 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 zero. Wow, it's strong. So if you have one zero, it equals zero. If you have 10 million zeros, it equals zero. So, it's the same. But if you add the one in the beginning, the more zeros you have, the more value it acquires. But you have to put the one. He will say Krishna is the one. So again, this is not just a concept to repeat in the class. As Krishna Chandra Prabhu said in the beginning, this is not just about sharing theory, but inhabiting those concepts, living those. That's why we are organizing this lecture here. It's not just let's have fun for a few hours and let's continue my life as if anything. Hopefully after the lecture there are some things that affected your life and make you think, oh, how can I adjust my lifestyle a little bit more today than before and yesterday so I can get closer to those beautiful ideas coming from Guru Shastra and Sadhu. So if you become nicely guided practitioner, all the things that you see now as an obstacle, all the things that see, oh, they are keeping me entangled in the material world, you start to see them from a different light. Also, everything becomes potential paraphernalia to be engaged in the service of Krishna. So, wow. My house, my child, daughter, son, wife, car, work. Everything can be connected with Krishna. Because everything is connected with Krishna. If we think or we feel something is not connected with Krishna, that's what we call Maya. Illusion. Illusion makes you think something cannot be connected with Krishna. So we'll take the stamp and put Maya Shakti. That's the label. You are being influenced by illusion. So you are seeing things and not connecting them with Krishna. Or even say it's not possible. So when we say it's not possible, means we may need further vision, further mercy, further guidance, further so many things maybe. So again, we are living very unique times, but maybe you speak with different people from different times and they will say the same. No, it's a very unique time, whatever, Second World War. So by comparison, some other times were worse than this one. It's not that this is necessarily the worst in every sense. No. You are born in Switzerland. No, in one sense, you are born in a heavenly planet on Earth. I come from South America and can tell you there are different standards. And now I can play the victim myself. No? Coming from a third world country. No, and I was the other day listening to one podcast and one lady who was born in South Korea. She was sharing all the things she had to do from being a child. I won't enter into detail, you will be too disturbed. No, regarding basic survival and having days that she had something, whatever you eat in one day, she had to eat in a whole week. And they had to divide and the whole thing to survive, and that was normal for them. That was the normal thing. Well, probably most of us were never hungry one single day in your life. Probably, I'm not saying, but I mean, devotees are always hungry a little bit, but prasad is there, and but you get the point I'm making. So this is very relative, this comparison system. Because you can always feel there is some worse situation. And that's also not the solution. That's my point. I'm not telling you, do not complain. There are always worse situations than yours. No, I'm not saying that. I'm not suggesting that. But I'm saying how subjective that is. And probably in some other places where people have more difficult situations, maybe they are not complaining as much. Because they learn to value whatever little they have, and they learn to struggle for that, and somehow things like this. No? And in another situation, you may get like complacent and over accustomed and taking for granted that you have this. So whenever something is missing, it's like, oh, no, I don't have as much chocolate as I would like, or something. Some other people never tasted chocolate in their lifetime. So this is my point, the relativity of time and circumstance, again, ages and the climate of the times. In some ways we are way better than in another times. Another time we are way worse. And it's not like black and white. No? So my point is, and it will always be like that. Again, we are not in Golok Vrindavan. There will always be some issues, even among the devotees. I remember one devotee was asking his guru, well, there were some issues between some relationships among the Vaishnavas in the community. He was asking, my Gurudev, why we cannot be in total harmony, perfectly? And he kind of looked at him like, say, we are not in Golok Vrindavan. No. So don't be over-idealizing, over-romanticizing, and over-expecting something without you doing all that you can do for that to happen. Because many times it's like that, no? I may say those things, but how much I'm doing my part as much as I can. Those who are doing their part as much as they can, they're very busy doing their part as much as they can. So probably they won't have time to complain or look, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence and all these type of things, no? So, in one sense, the advice to navigate the present times, we could say it's the same advice that every other, in other times we could give, in a general way. Which is, of course, to increase our Krishna consciousness, as simple as that may sound, and as complex as it is when you try to do that in practice. I was speaking with some people recently, and he was telling me that he's now very affected by this war because he was someone living in Poland, which is relatively close to all this situation there in Ukraine and Russia and so on. He was affected like with fear about at any moment anything can happen. So again, you can choose what to do with that situation. You go crazy, you go neurotic, and you cannot change anything anywhere. So and probably nothing happens, something happens. Or you can try to take advantages. Okay, this situation is taking me to live my life in a way that every day can be the last. That's great. Because every day can be the last, literally. You don't need a war on the next country to for that to happen. So try to take advantage of this, the most horrendous situation, if you want to put it like that. You have to become skillful in navigating difficulty. Always, I'm sorry for repeating myself, but in this type of topics, always my mind goes to Viktor Frankl. You study the man in search of meaning, and you say, well, there you have a person who was in the worst possible Kali Yuga scenario. He was prisoner in one of the Holocaust, concentration camps. Lager? How do you pronounce lager?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was faced with the situation. Okay, I cannot do anything to change the scenario externally. I cannot escape. I cannot, like, whatever, transform the minds of the people. So it's about my choice. How do I choose to go through this myself? He took advantage of the situation. Of the worst, most disadvantageous situation possible, he took advantage. He started to draw meaning and purpose to a point that he derived from that so much empowerment. And he derived so much like strength and faith about the unconditional meaning of reality. He attained this realization. Reality always has purpose and meaning. Unconditionally. Unconditionally means no matter what's going on outside. No matter if it's a Swiss chocolate or a concentration camp. There's inherent purpose in reality. So I must be open to discover that through whatever situation I'm going to. So I will try to emphasize that we try to concentrate and direct whatever energy and faculties we have in that direction. Because lots can be spent and misspent in trying to solve something that is not possible to solve. Yes.
Maybe some other things also, but Maharaj, someone phoned me before and he said, "Oh, can you ask Maharaj? I see so many promises in the Shastra. Oh, very quick, by the holy name, you attain divine realization." You know, in this very lifetime, but this is what he said, but I don't see so many examples on this world of sadhakas who really get on the higher realms. I see many general bhaktas, you know, they have steadiness in their practice, but where are the bhava bhaktas? Where are the one who really enter in the realm of spurti and lila?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems a little like contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I see so many practice and serious practice, but I don't see so many going in the higher realms of realization.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I don't know who made that question.
It's a serious devotee.
No, okay, I'm not questioning. But also, as we were speaking these days, Vaishnavira Kriya Modri Vignana Bhuyaha, there are many things to say. One thing is, even if someone attains Bhava Bhakti, how much do you have the eyes to recognize that? Because that has probably nothing to do with external symptoms. Rupa Goswami mentions that in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says, yeah, there may be Asta Satvika Vikar and all these external physical transformations, trembling, rolling, fainting, foam coming and sweating and crying, But also he says, you can learn many of those in a theater school also. And of course, you are not the Baba Bhakta by receiving a degree in drama or something. And also some Baba Bhaktas may be inspired and so humble that they will hide all those symptoms. Or, he says also, even Krishna may give mercy and show the symptoms, external symptoms of Baba Bhakti to someone who is not in Baba Bhakti, but just a trailer of what's to come, someone who is before Baba Bhakti. So he said, how to ascertain who is a Baba Bhakti? And then he will give this long, not long, but ninefold list of Shantir, Viraktir, Abhyartha, Kalatvam, and so on, which are a list of symptoms that you have to do most with what's going on internally of that person. And things that will be appreciated by observing that person maybe in the long run, not just one day. No, a very particular type of tolerance, of patience, of detachment, of attachment to Harinam and Dham, a very urgent sense of urgency about not wasting any moments, and so on. So that on one side. Other side, of course, is Bhava Bhakti Sudurlabha. It's not something easy to attain. Krishna himself said that again, as we said the other day, Manushya Nam Sahasra Su, of so many other verses. Now, this is not a joke. This is not cheap. So, as Prabhupada will say, you know, if a diamond is there, not many may be able to buy a diamond. But it's there. So you can acquire the necessary adhikar to get the diamond. But it may take some time. So all these statements in Shastra that say, I don't know, sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hai, that would say, like, even in a millisecond of sadhu sangha, you can attain sarva siddhi, full perfection. So we may wonder, like, one instant, I'm already in this lifetime, 23 years, and it's not happening yet. A similar verse in connection to Srinam, to different angas of bhakti, which we shouldn't think these are forms of arthavad. Because those things are in the scripture. Arthavad means like exaggeration. Sometimes like to promote something, scripture will kind of stretch a little bit the thing, and if you do this, this will happen. No. In the two directions. In the two directions. Not, if you do this, you will obtain such a nice goal. Or, if you don't do this, you will go to this worst possible hell for unlimited time. That was part of our conversation today in the train. How to understand those sections. Because if you take that literally, if you will go to some hell for unlimited time, it means that we are accepting the notion of eternal hell. And that's not our school. So there has to be explained in another way. No? So again, that's arthavad, which means some exaggeration. No? Some wanted to make some point and expressing it in a certain way to make it clear, that's not the idea, don't go there. It's not that you literally will go to eternal hell. But it's a way in which, in a certain place, country, time, some things are being expressed with certain ideas, concepts. And that's one interesting problem also in with Western tradition. I mean, not everyone, but many. In many, in our cases, we tend to takes things literally sometimes. And texts like the Vedas or our Shastras speak a lot not in literal terms, but they require lots of interpretation and consideration of context to properly reconcile whatever it says. Tattu samambaya. You have to reconcile whatever Shastri is saying. If you go on the literal way, you may clash very quickly. So that said, there are sections that present exaggeration. But, for example, one of the ten Nama Aparats is to consider that the glories of the holy name described in Shastra are an exaggeration. And one of those glories is, you just chant one name and you obtain everything. I can say, no, that's an exaggeration. But Shastra say, no, whenever the glories of Bhakti and Harinam are extolled, that's not Artavat. That you will wonder, so if that's not an exaggeration, why is it not happening? So that's a good question. Why is it not happening? Well, you should ask that question to yourself. not reclaiming to the Bhagavatam. Why you say that and it's not happening? Because the wind will bring the echo back to you, the same question. Why is it not happening? Why is it not happening? So you are invited to ask yourself, why is it not happening? What does it mean to chant the whole name once? What do we understand by that? We may think, oh, it's just like Hare Krishna. That's why I did it. But that's not the meaning of that. Again, don't take that literally. Or better, try to play out the fullest implications of that idea. For example, if Vanachakwari Thakur says, a devotee has no karma. And many things about a devotee. A devotee is totally transcendental. A devotee is totally beyond the gunas. And you may be like, I'm a devotee or not? Or is the scripture exaggerating or lying or mistaken? No. Basically, when certain sections shall say a devotee, they are speaking in the highest possible idea of what does it mean to be a devotee. And possibly when we hear that idea, we try to make it the lower possible version to what does it mean to be a devotee. So we can fit into the category somehow. Default. And that may create conflict because. So similar with the name, chanting the name one, what's the meaning of that? When Shastra say that is already implying, although not clarifying, you will be chanting it in the most perfect possible way, with pure love and so, and that will, no? So of course, then you're less, So these statements want to make some point, that is, there is so much power in these items, if you want to put it items, that only one dose of that, one drop of that, is enough. Potentially speaking, that can happen. No? But the point is that we generally are not addressing those items with the proper, maybe sometimes, understanding or attitude, or some mixed things are there yet. But we receive some results. So that's showing something is there. So if something is not there yet, because something is not there yet from me, from my side. It's not that Harinam is lacking something. So again, yes, these examples may sound like an exception to the rule, like only once and two. But potentially that's possible. Although the general course of action will be adopt sadhana and again, as we said the other day, Another way of putting that will be, Shastra will say, no, like, what's Sitam Prasangam Mavabidyasam Vido Bhavantirit Karna Rasayana Kata Tad Joshanat Asu Apavarga Vartmani Shadaratir Bhaktir Anukramishati. Asu means very quickly. By hearing Krishna say, by hearing my glories in Sadhu Sangha, this Harikata will be like an elixir entering the ears, going to the heart. And very, very quickly, Shraddha Rati Bhakti, which basically means Sadhana Bhava and Prem. Very quickly, you are trying those things. And you may say, very quickly? again, 20 years, 30 years, 4 years, not happening yet. But what's very quickly? We tend to measure from our particular perspective, and we think very quickly must mean I go to Ananda for a 1 week festival. I have to return a Bhava Bhakta from the mountain. Because we tend to measure things, maybe in this case, from the perspective of one lifetime. But Shastra is speaking from the perspective of eternity. From the perspective of beginningless lifetimes. So you cannot even count how many lifetimes you have been traveling. So in that measure of time, if you very quickly, maybe 2-3 lifetimes. But for us, in our one lifetime outlook, if we only think in terms of one lifetime, and Shastra will speak you beyond that, 2-3 lifetimes, it breaks your structure of how you measure time. And the idea is to do that, to invite you to think in, again, broader, bigger picture. So from the perspective of eternity, 2-3 lifetimes is just in 1 second. We know these measures of time with us and Brahma, for example. One day of Brahma, so much is for us, 1 year. So, and it's Brahma. He's not in eternity. So I know it's difficult to imagine, but you have to understand this type of thing. So like sometimes one devotee say, like hypothetically, the most beautiful lady on earth is the ugliest in the heavenly planets. Like a way of making this idea, whatever you understand as beauty here has no point of comparison in higher realms, even in material existence. What to speak transcendence? What to speak about time? So Shastra is revealed from beyond, if you will. So Shastra is the eternal plane revealing itself to us here. So when Shastra says very quickly in 1 instant, speaking about quickly and instant according to perspective of eternity. And we should and try to understand and develop faith in that also. As I said the other day, 2-3 lifetimes is not much time. It's not much time. If we feel it's much time, that's actually showing how much we are attached and entangled to the material sense of time and existence, which is so insignificant and small. But the more we grow internally, the more we will feel 2-3 lifetimes. And as we say in the beginning, Ananda, I'm ashamed to pay so little. Like Mukunda will say, no? If I have to wait for 1 million lifetimes to see Mahaprabhu again, he starts to celebrate. Go, Hari. 1 million lifetimes is the price to see Mahaprabhu. I'm celebrating that I'm paying so of such a discount. Thank you so much. I'm paying so little. 1 million lifetimes, he was willing to pay, to wait. And our acharya say, 2-3. Such an... Anyhow, something like that. There are different ways of understanding, different ways of perceiving that. No? So, any other question? We have a few minutes. Someone has a question?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I didn't see the hand.
Maharaj, last week...
Malati, right?
Malini. Yes. Last week you shared something about Gauranga Mahaprabhu having his eternal lila in Nityanavadvip.
Yes.
And also I heard from you that it is an internal something going on. He tries to taste that as well, because it's eternal.
Yes.
So I wondered, is there Mahaprabhu who is eternally in Gambhira and like as a sannyasi and...
You want to know if there is something like that in eternity?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's the question.
Yes.
Okay. So...
Yes, this is...
Yeah. Okay. So that's an interesting question. So, of course, to begin with, we have received from our acharyas this notion of Nitya Navadvip, which is interesting because in one sense, not every Gaudiya Vaishnava accepts that possibility. Although most accept it, a few small circle considers that since the Goswamis never spoke about Nitya Navadvip in a clear, overt way, then it's not there. But Krishna Chandra Prabhu will have some problem with that. I remember our first day we were speaking about that, and for the next 2-3 days he just spontaneously was to come. But Maharaj, this verse in the Gita says that, so that's proof that Nityanandavi is there. And then out of the blue. But this idea, it has to be. It cannot not be. So, and of course I was rejoicing and say, yes, I agree. I totally agree. I'm not one of the ones who think this doesn't exist. Don't get angry with me. So of course, although the Goswami have not said that explicitly, that's an interesting point, that doesn't mean that something does not exist. No? Because, for example, the Goswamis have not almost written anything about the pastimes of Mahaprabhu on earth, the 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan. So does it mean that that doesn't exist? Hopefully you don't conclude like that. So actually we have to learn how to put some things together, even from the writings of the Goswamis, to see how Mahaprabhu's lila is eternal. So one thing will be, for example, one example is the Goswamis on one side said all the avatars have their corresponding abodes in the spiritual world. And many times they speak about Mahaprabhu as Gaur avatar. So if you put these two things together, I think it's not so difficult to conclude he must have his abode in eternity. So okay, of course the question is more, but okay, which abode is there, which are there different abodes of Mahaprabhu apart from Nitya Navadvip? No, because as we know Krishna here on earth, he has been in Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka. And we learn from our Goswamis that Krishna has those 3 corresponding abodes existing in Golok. Golok has these three divisions, if you will. Golok Dwarka, Golok Mathura, Golok Vrindavan. But of course we Gaudis will say, and also one section of that Golok is Navadvip. We call Golok Navadvip, where Mahaprabhu will be eternally relishing Radha Bhav, because he tried his best on earth. He was successful on one level, no? But at the same time Radha Bhav is endless. No, it's a bottomless ocean. So Krishna needs a whole lila for eternity in which he can dive deep forever and keep discovering new depths of the love of the heart of Radha. So Nitya Navadvip is there. But as Krishna had these other lilas apart from Braj, when he goes to Mathura and Dwarka, and we many times we hear Mahaprabhu's sannyas lila is parallel to Krishna's living Vrindavan, living, quote-unquote, he never lives. So, and Krishna leaps to Mathura and Dwarka, and those realms exist for eternity. So Krishna leaps, Mahaprabhu leaps Nadia for Puri. So, is there a Nitya Puri? No? Is there a Nitya Navadvip? Is there a Nitya Jagannath Puri? No? So that's an interesting question. And that's, I would say, something that has not been explored in that much detail in our tradition. Generally, even the idea of Nitya Navadvip may be generally accepted, but also it's not generally too much explored. That's what I felt the necessity to write the whole book about that, and I'm thinking about. No? So, if even Nitya Navadvip is not that much considered in the minds of many Gaudiyas, probably the idea of Nitya Puri is even less considered. So that's it. There are a few hints here and there that that could be a possibility. For example, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we see that Gopakumar is traveling through different places. And at one point he goes to Vaikuntha, and at one point in Vaikuntha, one section, if you will, of Vaikuntha is Jagannath Puri. So he goes to Jagannath Puri. He becomes the temple president of Jagannath Mandir or something like that for some time. And that's in Vaikuntha. So if we want to take that as praman, as our evidence, Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Sanatana Goswami, we could make a case there is an eternal Jagannath Puri. Of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's an eternal Gaur Leela in Jagannath Puri. That could be another addition. But I've known of some devotees who have composed some, like we have the Astaka Leela Leela in Nityanavadev. Some of them have composed in Nitya Puri with Mahaprabhu. I've heard about that. I've not read those. I'm doing some research to get them. Radha Madh Prabhu, he has done some research in that connection also. A friend of ours. So I would say there's not like extremely conclusive proof that there is a Gaur Leela in Nitya Jagannath Puri. But I would say that, of course, it's not that I'm against and that cannot be and something, but I would say that even if that's the case, at least in our particular tradition, we generally are not that much interested in that direction, as we are not so much projecting into Krishna's Golok in Mathura and Dwarka. Although we learn from those leelas, we appreciate them. So similarly for us, Mahaprabhu's sannyas leela is very important. Very important. He's traveling and teaching so many important sections. He's instructing Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Rath Yatra in Puri, so many nice things. But still he's a sannyasi. So there's some Aishwarya there. So the intimacy and the sweetness of Bishvambar Nimai in Nadia, it's not there. There is some. So in that sense, and that's why we Gaudiyas generally never worship Mahaprabhu as a sannyasi in an altar. No, generally you don't have Mahaprabhu's with danda and my Guru Maharaj tells a story that once one god brother of him in the Prabhupada's times, he was worshipping Gaur Nitai deities. And this devotee dressed the two of them as sannyasis. With danda and kamandalu, orange robes. So my Guru Maharaj saw that and he was like, oh, never saw that. He felt something like strange. You know, like this. So he went and asked Srila Prabhupada, like, this is what the devotee is doing. What do you think of that? And Prabhupada entered like in a deep dhambasi mood, if you will. He said, we don't like to think of Mahaprabhu as a sannyasi. No? He sided with the Nadia Vasis. No? Bhaktivinoda Thakur even sings like that. No? So we are in the Bhaktivinoda Parivar. So we have to follow him. There is one bhajan that he writes and he prays basically, when will Nimai leave his sannyas and return to us to Navadvip? So he's singing like one of the inhabitants of Navadvip himself. No? Feeling this separation. When he will return to us in Nadia, we are dying in his separation. When he will leave that sannyas. No? Sometimes it's called Kapata sannyas, like cheating sannyas. This Aishwarya, this superficial thing. Come back to us, you are our town boy. No, like Krishna being a prince in Dwarka and all this Aishwarya, and the gopis are like, what's going on with you? That's not you. We know you. No? So in that sense, again, we venerate and appreciate Mahaprabhu sannyas. But in the eternal prospect, that's not part of our bhajan, if you will. That's why you won't find deities of him as Sri Krishna Chaitanya. So my point will be, even if for some, I mean, to be honest, I've not met people, the Gaudiya Vaishnava, that tell me, I would like to enter Nitya Jagannath Puri and serve Mahaprabhu eternally as a sannyasi in Gambira. I'm not saying there's nobody like that. Probably there is. Probably. The one who wrote this Stakaliya Lili in Puri, probably. But generally, our main interest will be, as it is, to go in the direction of Vrindavan, it will be to go in the direction of Navadvipa. But probably further research will be done in the future in that direction. So we will share whatever way appears on the way. Yeah.
Maybe it's a Sanjari Bhav, because in Braj Leela, Krishna, in extreme separation of Radhika and desperation, sometimes Vrindadevi appears and she dresses him as a sannyasi. So it's like some Sanjari Bhav in Nitya Vrindavan. So in one way one can say, maybe in the Gaura Leela also, it's just like a little wave on the great ocean of experiencing Radha Bhav.
Nice way to put it, thank you. But again, yes, you mentioned Sanchari, which means like momentary, you say? Like momentary, not like stai, if you will, not like a permanent reality, but something that only is bringing out to augment the main the emotional disposition in that particular place, yeah. Ishodi has a question. She's struggling. What's going on? You're like this.
It was just a thought of this topic that you were mentioning, this from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur.
What from Bhaktisiddhanta?
He had this desire, I think it was from him, that he had this desire to enter, leave his body in Kurukshetra.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
And bringing this in connection, like he wanted to serve there, Radha, where he needed most assistance, like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu needs in Gambira most assistance to experience, to come to his experience of Radha Bhav. So this was,
yeah,
can you put this in connection or not?
Well, I would say that so one thing is the Prakat Lila, another thing is the Nitya Lila. No? Because there is some chronological unfolding, as we mentioned. So, for example, this idea of serving Radha in Kurukshetra. No? That has to do with the Lila on earth. No? It's not that in Golok there is Golok Kurukshetra or Radha goes to Kurukshetra or something. And when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making his point, leaving my body, it has a lot to do with leave my body as an entering somewhere in eternity. So if he wants to live in serving Radha in Kurukshetra, doesn't mean he's pointed to some Kurukshetra, that there will be Radha Dasyam in Kurukshetra. But as we mentioned, he wants to make a point, which is in her moment of great necessity, I want to be there assisting her. So in the earthly Leela, that moment of great necessity is appearing in that Kurukshetra meeting. But it doesn't mean that that's moment, the only moment of greatest necessity. The greatest necessity keeps increasing. But that's a very, like, very graphic, crucial moment that we can very easily see, oh, she really is in a necessity there. And this contrast of moods and so Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I want to be there in that moment where she needs it the most. But of course that will correspond in eternity with Vrindavan. No? Radha Dasyam in Vrindavan, not in Kurukshetra. And as we say, although Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that, he never made any practical arrangements to leave his body in Kurukshetra. No? He could, but he passed away in Godrum. So he wanted to make a point. Like, I want to be fully identified with the greatest necessity. I want to be ready to serve in the greatest necessity, moment of greatest necessity. So, going to your question, okay, we have Mahaprabhu and Gambhira. Again, for a minute, let's not consider that there may be a Gambhira in Nityapuri. So we will relate Gambhira to the earthly Leela. So we can say again, in the unfolding, chronological unfolding of the earthly Leela, Mahaprabhu is reaching this peak necessity moment in Gambhira. Okay, fair enough, we can accept that. So one could say, okay, then I want to leave my body in Gambhira, assisting Mahaprabhu in his moment of greatest necessity. But the point is, again, that was his peak necessity in the earthly Leela in Puri. But if you go to Nityanavadvip, he continues tasting Radhabhav, but he never ends. So in other words, his necessities continue increasing. It's not that in Gambhira and Puri he was very in need, and you go to Nityanavadvip and he's there relaxed. No need. I'm in Nityanavadvip. I'm in need when I'm going on earth. No. His need in Nityanavadvip is ongoing and always increasing. There's no limit to that. We have to try to enter into that dynamic. That comes on earth at times and plays out in a certain way, but it's not that you go to Golok Vrindavan, Golok Navadvip, and they are relaxed, not too much separation, not too much need, everything is... No, that's intense. So again, we could see that, we could say, if you want to serve Mahaprabhu in his moment of greatest necessity, I mean, Nityanavadvip can be a place for that. It's not that you need to impose, if you will, Gambhira Puri for that to happen. Without that, he has no necessity in Nityanavadvip. No, he has necessity. And every moment will be the moment of the greatest necessity. No? 5 seconds after that, the new greatest moment of greatest necessity. Purnam Brita Swadhanam. Exactly. It's at each and every step. You will be able, as Mahaprabhu says in the first verse of Shikshastakam, to relish the fullness of Amrit, of the nectar of immortality. He didn't like that idea. He wants a Nitya Gambhira. He wants to be a dog protecting the Gambhira so nobody disturbs Mahaprabhu. Okay, what to do? There will be place for that. We'll make the arrangement. So, yeah, I think it's important to understand how the things work there, if you will. I hope that helps. Okay. So, I think we are on time, but maybe, I don't know, if there's any other question before finishing, of course, tomorrow I live in Switzerland, so I want to be also as available as I can till I'm remaining these last hours here.
We go continuously till 6 in the morning.
Yeah. May I ask a practical question about chanting?
Of course.
I've heard that it's considered to be good if you chant the full round without any interruption. But in practice, I see that many people sometimes stop and maybe answer something, a question, or even say something, or you know. And so I'm trying, or I would like to know what is your point of view.
Well, my point of view will be mostly in agreement with the first idea.
Oh. Actually, Vinod Bhavlavi asked him something similar.
Uh-huh.
He said, 64 rounds without interruption.
Yeah, I know some devotees, apart from, of course, Vinod Bhava, some other devotees, I know that they will just sit and chant the whole lag in one sitting.
No?
Because my point is, I mean, of course, that may sound like a lot for most, but the point is also to create this proper attitude in addressing the holy name. No? Because again, the holy name is Radha and Krishna in their most merciful descent coming to our life. So we are having like an audience of them. So I mean, I'm not exaggerating. This is what's actually taking place. At least in theory, we should know that's going on. Whenever I put my hand inside my beat bag, I'm inviting Radha and Krishna to have and give me their audience. So I should behave in a certain way. No? It's like if I invite someone and I start a conversation with the person, ideally I have to be there for the with the person during the whole conversation. It's not that I don't know, just she is there and she's speaking and like doing something else and she feels like, Maharaj, I was supposed to be speaking with you. Or doing things and interrupt. Wait a minute. What type of flow will be there? What type of dialogue? No? And this is not any conversation. This is the most important dialogue we can possibly have. So, in simple terms, the idea will be whenever we are chanting, we should be only chanting. I mean, we should not think about doing something else apart from that. Which I think hopefully it sounds like common sense. No? If you are studying Shastra, hopefully you are not doing something else because you cannot do two things at the same time. No? You need to interrupt. No? And of course that's another whole conversation that we have recently. That I know that nowadays with social media dynamics, that's so invasive, no? When the cell phone and something in your pocket vibrating at every second, it may create constant interruptions. So we need to make some arrangement for the next, at least one round, which technically speaking it doesn't take 3 hours. So we should be able to determine, okay, I will begin and I will finish this whole round. Hopefully more than one round, but we have to begin somewhere. Whatever is more sustainable for everyone. But whatever I begin, hopefully I can finish that. And not just leave that at half. Because, as we say in English, you have to make full circle. So I will recommend that. I will recommend trying to chant in such a way that you don't need to interrupt your chanting.
But what if you're on the train and then you cannot finish or something like that?
But probably you shouldn't be chanting on the train. Or you should chant in a way that you know you will be finishing. No, I mean, one have to pay some attention to that. Because of course chanting is not just like a casual thing that you do while doing the game. Three more things at the same time. No? You are driving, you have the cell phone, you are chanting, and you are, I don't know, buying something through the window to someone who is selling things on the traffic lights. What chanting is that one? No? How it was? Namaskar Bahir. Nama, what is?
Namaskar Bahir.
Or something like that. Yeah, the letters may be sounding, but that's not Srinam. No, chanting the holy name is not just saying H A R E. It has to do with where you are internally. So I will try to emphasize that. No? Try to organize your chanting in the day in such a way that you don't need to interrupt the chanting. No? So you can have like, I don't know, whatever, half an hour in the morning, whatever it may be sustainable, and I will only chant and I will do that. Of course, I understand that someone says the house is burning or your mother is dying in the other room. I mean, let's be practical. I get the point, but try to get my point. No? One thing is extreme emergency. Another thing, don't try to make that the rule. That's an extreme exception to the rule. The rule is another thing. No? So, of course, common sense is there. It's okay. I remember I was once chanting in when I was living in Buenos Aires in one farm there near Vrindavan. I was chanting and someone came to Maharaj, one of the houses is burning. No, and there are some devotees inside. Do you think I have to finish my round. I finish my round, they are finished. So again, it's common sense. I put my japa big and I start running like mad to put the fire out. No? Because, I mean, So there has to be this practical consideration, but we have to be honest, is really an emergency or... Because chanting should be an emergency also. I'm in an emergency of developing love for Krishna. That's an emergency. No, like I sometimes say in joking, some people just they're waking up in the beginning of the day and the first thing they grab their cell phone and they need to, okay. And I say, why so quickly? Well, Maharaj, there may be an emergency. Yeah, but also the topmost in priority is that you develop your Krishna consciousness. So maybe you can just wake up and first offer pranam to Krishna and your guru. That's an emergency. It's not that the only emergency can happen in your cell phone. Like making this point, no? Don't lose this sense of urgency with your practice. Not in a neurotic way, no, but in valuing the seriousness of that, no? Yes.
Thank you so much for your answer, and I understand your point
really
well. And but there are some situations where I will actually chant less if I see it exactly like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say, for example, I'm in a car driving to come here, for example.
Don't chant driving the car.
No.
No.
Even if I'm a passenger?
When you ride and you don't
drive.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, that's also not the ideal situation, but of course I was thinking about being the driver because sometimes I've seen people driving and chanting. So in that moment I'm just myself, I'm chanting as a passenger, just praying not to have an accident. Because I mean you cannot do the two things at the same time. Probably you are not doing any of the two too much. No? Like sometimes I see the devotees chanting while we are having Harikatha.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm wondering, are you hearing the class? And if you tell me yes, then I'm wondering, are you chanting then? You got to do the same two things at the same time. And probably you are not doing any of the two things fully. You're like, coming and going. And better do one thing, because the mind cannot concentrate on two things simultaneously. So I make this point to begin with as a driver, no, because I'm not saying you're doing that, but sometimes I've seen that. And sometimes the idea behind that is, I need to finish my rounds. No? I need to get to the quota, to the daily number. But chanting is not about counting. It's not about reaching a daily number. Nobody will ask you at the end of your life, how many chants did you chant in this lifetime? You did it 16 every day or whatever? No? Of course, with this I'm not saying relax and chant whatever you want. I'm not just going to that extreme either. But be careful of not conducting your chanting just as getting to a number. But you have to get to a place in your heart while chanting. And sometimes it may be better to chant less with proper quality than start to lose quality just to attain quantity. You follow my point? Because sometimes in the books that they, let's say, I don't know, the first 8 rounds, they can do it nicely with quality. But the last 8 rounds are more about finding places in the day so they reach the 16. But they are not with this thing, I have to reach the number. So they start to counteract the initial quality and replace enough quantity. So maybe in that case I would say you chant less, but better. And if you do that, eventually you will chant more in quantity. Because the more quality is there, the more you will be inspired to chant more. So again, I'm not saying you don't chant as a passenger. But also I will say, if you can, try to have at least some time a day where you are not even in a car. Because it's a distracting environment. I mean, there is cars and movement and voices. I mean, maybe you can concentrate a little bit more than if you are driving, I'm sure. But probably if you are doing nothing at all, you can concentrate even more. No, so I'm not forbidding you cannot chant while being, but I think we should be honest and have common sense and know which are those moments that I can chant in the best possible way and how can I organize my day so I have as much moments as I can of that. And yes, okay, if someone would like to chant in a car or something, try to do it attentively and nicely, but I think if you're honest, you will realize it's not that easy as to chant in quietly in your room or something like that. I'm saying this because sometimes we may think, it doesn't matter where and how, it's just about chanting and getting to the number. But it's not the same, chanting, I don't know. In the city,
also,
yes, sir.
The problem is also, one gets used and acquainted to inattentive chanting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then this becomes like the normal experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And like we discussed in the train also, how really it needs like an entry door, like, you know, oh, now I'm approaching the divine couple. I really pray that a dialogue is happening and there is Buddha Shuddhi, there is like some prayers. Who is chanting now? And now I enter the greatest service I could ever render in this creation. So there is like a certain preparation, a certain mood. And if one is like getting acquainted and habituated to inattentive chanting, then this becomes like the normal spiritual life. And there is a tendency that spiritual life can be like fading out.
Mm-hmm.
At one point it's only an external structure.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's not an experience anymore.
Yeah. And of course, in the long run, if you don't have that experience, it may be difficult to continue, basically. Because you will start to feel nothing is happening, but probably you have been like creating a samskar for Namaparad, basically. Promoting inattentive chanting and more and more and more. So we should be very careful, because that can happen easily. We can get accustomed to that. And some other people may be doing that, so it even may be normal. Oh, they're doing that also. They're driving and chanting, Maharaj. Well, I say, they're being in the class and chanting. I mean, if you say, yes, I know some. So the point is, some people are doing it and maybe thinking, it's okay, no problem. So that's a subtle, it's subtle, but it ends up in a very gross problem. Because we remain more in the formal, external aspect of the number, chanting, but what's going on inside. So...
But the instruction is chant always.
Yes.
Never forget Krishna.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that the driver is not allowed to chant.
Exactly.
Without counting, maybe.
Exactly.
Just chant.
Yeah, we can chant always, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, from which place, which one thing is my sadhana and trend. But even if I'm chanting without japa mala, I will try to do it as best as possible,
yeah,
not just like casually. Because you can even get accustomed to I'm chanting always, nobody can tell me anything. But you can make all that like a automatic process, and you can get accustomed to being automatized. See, we don't want to be I get your point totally, but also there's always these dangers, you know, of automatizing everything. No? You can do the puja and it can be just like you are just counting 4, 2, 3, 7. Okay, next thing. 1, 2. And you can program some robot to do the same thing. He will do it more on time and nicely, then move the chamara better than you, maybe. They have these kirtan machines in India, no? Like boom, boom. Well, I remember when Krishnadas Babaji, the disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta, he was well known as very nice kirtaniya. So he was once doing kirtan, and some Prabhupada disciples went to him. And they went like with one recording machine, no? To record. So he was about to do kirtan with them. So one devotee to put the recording machine. He was like, what's that for? I mean, he knew it was a recording machine. I said, like, to record your kirtan, Maharaj. I said, but for what? So we can hear it then again. I said, no, better you do kirtan again. No, it's not just about putting play in the table. No. But you yourself do kirtan. Which again, we are not saying now you throw all your CDs and MP3, but the point, no? The point he wants to make. No? It's not just pressing a button and someone else is doing it for you. But you have to participate, enter in that. So again, this may take different forms in different cases and situations, but the spirit is the same. That's my point. I'm not just telling you the rule. It's like this, it's not like this externally. It may take some different forms. You may be chanting in the car or not, or chanting always, but the point is you have to see what's taking place inside of me. No? So if it's working, okay, great, no problem. It's okay, is it understood? Clear? Okay. But never driving, please. Something else?
Let's just have a more practical question also. Okay. Now that you're leaving this country, so how do we know where you're going to be at, like, if you're a tour? Like, I think I remember you said you're going back to Costa Rica or South America.
Yeah, I will have some few stops.
Yeah.
I generally publish in my, I have one, so Facebook, basically.
It's on Facebook only?
Oh. I have also Instagram. I mean, it's a weird Instagram because in my Instagram I publish only the flyers of my journeys. That's not so much what people does with Instagram. And generally people take like, but I don't have cell phones. So in those two, I publish those things there, basically. Yeah. You don't have any of those.
No.
Okay, you're fortunate.
You still access his to see the flyers he posts, even mm-hmm. though you don't have one, mm-hmm. I think.
But you have also a homepage, and there are also
I have things. Yeah. There's a homepage. There's a YouTube channel. There are all these things, mm-hmm. and there's an email in case you need to know. You can also write and ask, and we can share them. Yeah. Because it's so many places that I don't even have an idea where I will be going in a few months. So.
Non-stop. So after being in Switzerland, do you consider to come back here again?
I will consider. It all depends how nice boys and girls you are. How nicely you do your homework, I may... joking. I'll pray so I do my homework nicely so I may gain some mercy to visit you again. But yeah, of course, that will be great fortune. To, as Krishna Chandra shouted me the other day in Ananda, I was walking and Maharaj, I said, what's happening? This is only the beginning. I thought when he shouted me, Maharaj, some house is on fire or something. And when he told me this is only the end, I thought, he's on fire. Chandra's heart is on fire. May we enter that fire. So, yeah, hopefully, I'll let you know. Of course, if that happens, that may be in next year or something, because there's already whole schedule, like, already... I mean, I travel too much, so I need also to be intelligent in organizing where I go, so I'm not like doing like this the whole year. So I need to save as much time and luxury as possible as well. But yeah, hopefully. Let's see.
Maharaj also published a book, a very famous book, Everything Ananda Dham. It's like 400 pages, very deep, searched out, and wonderfully written. Deep philosophical understanding about the struggles of the jiva. It's called Inherent or Inherited. So it's a wonderful book. You can get it in Amazon or otherwise when it's
also available in Amazon. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that reaches here Switzerland or not, but I think so.
Yeah.
So one can also search for that in Amazon. It's even in Kindle format or print version if someone likes.
Yes. We don't end with practical things.
Sorry?
But we don't end with practical things.
Uh-huh.
Can you just say a few words before, well, chanting, you said, oh, then I take the mala and I enter in a conversation with the divine couple. So normally I can see in any Vaidhi Bhakti structure there is a lot of emphasis on how to do things.
Mm.
Oh, you have to hold your japa like this, and you have to sit like this, and I have to do some pranayama like this. But the more deeper it goes, the less instruction or the less guidance is there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can say a few words. What does it mean to enter in a conversation? What is it? What is the mood of prayer?
I think you are the person to answer that question. Everyone here knows of that. Do you support my thesis or not? So. Camera is pointing to you. There's something here, but share some of your insights with us, please.
Tricked. He got tricked.
Chandra Prabhu ki.
It's not
fair. Mercy is beyond justice. So. Mercy is never fair. Give us your mercy.
So, really knowing what is holy name, it's Golokera Premadan Harinama Sankirtan. This is not a name. This is like the whole realm, a divine couple with the associates, with the Dham. It's like the whole atmosphere is in the name. This is what Mahaprabhu is calling Na Namakari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis. This means it's everything completely there. So this means I'm not chanting anything. Actually, I'm entering the whole mood of Nitya Dham. So, and then very naturally, one may ask, oh, what is that mood? Then I have to go like the essence of Raghunuga Bhakti, like we spoke the last days in your classes about Brahma Stuti. Even Brahma understood, oh, then I have, if this is in Naam, is the whole atmosphere of the eternal world, and the real existence of the spiritual world is exchange of love, then I have an extreme urgency to approach what are the devotees doing there, how do they interact. So this is like the San Krishna Smaram Janam Chasya Prestanija Samhitam. Then I will not just approach Radha Krishna.
Mm.
Then I will go special emphasis to the associates. Like in Vilap Kusumanjali, at the very end, when Raghunathas Goswami is in greatest anxiety because Radhika is not answering, then he is turning Hashri Sarovara Sadhatva Isahamadisha. He's going to Yamuna and he's praying to Giriraj and then he's praying to Ishaka. You know, if, and this is like the way I go to them. It's like an approach, how do they, and I want to hear from them and I want to sit with them, because Harinam is an atmosphere of seva in the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very wonderful what you said, Maharaj, of the moment of most urgency, this is seva.
Mm.
And we all, I think, oh, something has to be preached and something has to be made here and repaired here and made here. But really, there is no greater urgency than in the Nitya Dham.
Mm-hmm.
It's not here. It's like always in a theocentric way. So then naturally a life of prayer emanates, because then I think, oh, it's a real serious thing. So maybe you can elaborate that. A little background on that.
Thank you so much, very nice. Yeah, I was thinking about what you mentioned, Niya Sarva Sakti. Simple, I always like to think like this. Niya Sarva Sakti means all Shaktis are present in Srinam. So, all Shaktis means all Shaktis. And we are one of those Shaktis. So we are inside Srinam. No, it's not that Srinam is coming from outside and I'm taking it in from the mouth or something, but the perspective should be shifted in the other direction. It's not that I am the chanter, as you said, of the Nam and I'm taking the Nam or something, but I'm already that, I mean, Hari now has all Shaktis there, so I am there if you want that. It's a very interesting way of conceiving of ourselves in connection to the Nam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings in one song, outside of Srinam there's nothing, it is in this whole creation. So but maybe exactly. So we may not have that insight, but we at least know that someone who has the vision is telling us that's the real way of approaching and appreciating what's taking place when chanting. Now everything is inside Srinam, me included, but I'm not realizing that somehow. I totally appreciate your emphasis on this point, that there is a higher necessity in the world of love than in the world of non-love, if you will. Because, of course, we perceive so many necessities here. And on some level, they are valid. I mean, I'm not against, like, you know, helping people that are hungry or there are necessities and we are compassionate. But in one sense, those are that type of compassion has to do with certain things that happen more in connection to the influence of material existence, if you will. So if you take that material existence, because in Golok there is no material existence, so should I be compassionate there or no need for compassion? There's nobody to feed, there's no need to open hospitals, there's no even need to preach. No, I don't need to distribute books to anyone there. No, there are all devotees already. No, like once one devotee told Srila Prabhupada, no, because that was the mood of the time. You know, like, I would like to open... Oh, translation. 15 minutes of translation. You can do.
It's recorded.
Yeah, okay. So one devotee told Srila Prabhupada, they were in Radhakunda, you know, doing parikra. So one would say, I was thinking about opening a temple in Radhakunda. So Prabhupada asked him, for what? And the devotee was shocked, no? Because, I mean, he replied in the most, what he considered the obvious way, which is for preaching, Prabhupada. You can imagine. So Prabhupada said that, but Radhakunda is not a place for ordinary things like preaching. Of course, he was not saying preaching is ordinary. He was saying what's going on here is super extraordinary. You don't need to preach to anyone here. No, this type of thing. So the idea is, so we may think, oh, so there is no need, there's no service here. Because we may sometimes think service is, as you say, no? Collecting, constructing some. So the closer I get to transcendence, the less necessities are there. And as we spoke these days, that has more to do with a, if you will, a Vaikuntha-like idea of God, Atmaram. That's an interesting point, because, and I plan to, those are some of my notes for the next one. I remember we spoke about this last year in Gadadhar Pandit's appearance day. Because we concentrated on how Gadadhar is Sri Radha in her moment of greatest necessity. Because she's serving Krishna in his moment of greatest necessity. So whatever is his greatest necessity becomes her greatest necessity, because she's totally identified with his necessity. So if Krishna in the moment of greatest necessity is Mahaprabhu, then Radha in the moment of greatest necessity will be Gadadhar. So, I was presenting this idea that a spiritual identity, our, will develop according to a spiritual identification with the service necessity. So according to the spiritual necessity I perceive, there will be a corresponding spiritual identity. You follow my point? Identity comes out of identification with something. No? We are identified in the direction of matter, we develop a sense of identity in that connection. So, if I perceive a spiritual necessity, I will develop a corresponding identity. But if I don't perceive a spiritual necessity, my own sense of identity may not be very clear. Like, for example, in general, in Christianity, with all respect, but generally there's not a very clear depiction of what's going on in transcendence. So there's not a very clear depiction of if there's any spiritual necessity there, of God. So there's not a clear picture of who I will be there. And many Christians just see themselves there as they are here. No? So I'll be there with my family and the dog, and we will be doing the same things we love here, but there without interruption. So if you like to drink vodka a lot, you will be able to drink vodka for eternity in heaven without ever getting drunk. For some people, that's their idea of heaven. For us, that's a closer idea of hell than heaven. Quite self-centered. But my point is, there's not a clear idea of who God is, if he has necessities. If you go a little higher, you go to Vaikuntha, there is a little bit clearer idea. It's Narayan there. But Narayan is Atmaram, self-satisfied. He doesn't need anything. He's God. So whoever is there is serving him, mostly because a sense of he's to be served because he's God. No, more like out of a sense of duty. No, Narayan is God and he's to be served. So here and there's a corresponding spiritual identity in connection to that. But they do not feel Narayan has necessities. At least not generally. No? Maybe sometime Narayan will tell Jai Bijai, I want to have a good fight. As we know, they come as Hiranyaka and so on, all these descents. But generally, that's not the norm in Vaikuntha. No? God is self-satisfied, he doesn't have needs. But when you go beyond Vaikuntha, Narayan is no longer Narayan. Actually, the original form of Narayan appears, which is Krishna. And Krishna has so many necessities. But his necessities are not out of material emptiness, but out of fullness of love. As we said the other day, love has this paradoxical result. That you are filled, but you are at the same time feel this can always grow more. So you are satisfied, but you are dissatisfied because it can always reach higher levels. So that creates what we call lila, or a dynamic movement in transcendence. So the closer you get to Vrindavan, no? Ayodhya, Dwarka, Mathura, Vrindavan, the more in need God is. No? Krishna is extremely needy. No? As Krishna Chandra was mentioning, on a daily dynamics, Radha and Krishna need so much help from their friends to get united on a daily basis. From the Priyanarma Sakas, Priyanarma Sakis, and many times a day they are dying in separation. So that's a huge necessity. God is about to die. And you will have to be there in order to help, so you save his life. That will be our daily service for eternity. To save the life of God many times per day. Don't you think that's an urgency? No? So my point is, and there has to be, on that level of urgency, there has to be a corresponding level of spiritual identity or a spiritual identification with that urgency. So the more we identify with such a level of urgency, a corresponding identity will manifest. That's what we call a spiritual identity. So that has to do, it comes as a result of identifying with the need of the moment. So ultimately our chanting has to do with that. Not so much with, Krishna has so many needs, please provide. But realizing, my needs are a joke in one sense. Your needs are really urgent and serious. Those are emergencies. You are about to die in separation from your devotees. I'm not dying in separation from you. I'm dying in separation from chocolate. Or whatever. You fill the line with whatever you want. Hopefully someday we can write Krishna there. No? So it's important to gradually at least awaken to this reality, no? Like, there is so much need there. When you love, then real needs, necessities come to the foreground. So we chant wanting to access that world, that realm. Understanding the chanting in itself is not different from that world. And in that world there are so many necessities. And we are having the chance of offering ourselves in service and identify ourselves with those necessities. So that's what actually taking place during chanting. So, again, I know it's too high and we may feel, wow, no, I'm not there. But even to appreciate this idea in theory, that's extremely powerful. So we have to begin somewhere. And from there gradually progress. So I hope that complements somehow the main points made by Krishna Chandra Prabhu. Shri Hari Nam Prabhu ki
Jai.
Shala Gurudev ki
Jai.
Shriman Mahaprabhu ki
Jai.
Shri Gaur Nityanand ki
Jai.
Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra ki
Jai.
Shri
Girirani
Madani ki Jai. Oh, sorry, I didn't say it. I'm too low here. Shri Gaur Gadadhar ki
Jai.
Gaur Bhakta Vrind ki Jai. Shri Nitai Prabhu ki
Jai.
Gaur Premanand.